From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And as promised here on this Saturday edition of the Pat Miller Program, here in our final hour, let's kick it off with 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, how are you, sir?
It's a good question, Pat. A challenging week in D.C., a disappointing week. So,
yeah, I remember when I used to ask you how things.
Still voting today.
I remember when I used to ask you how things were going up there, and you'd say, "Oh, things are good, things are fine." Yeah, those answers don't come as readily as easily as they used to.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked about this before. I get disappointed at Democrats, but I get mad at Republicans.
Yeah,
and this week I'm mad because a lot of Republicans went along with the Democrats to sell our country out instead of putting our country first. They put the interest of Ukraine first. And that, frankly, Pat, that makes me angry.
Let me ask you a question, okay? And we didn't discuss this before I brought you on the air. Why is that so easy for them to do with Republicans? Why are Republicans so quick to jump to the other side and to vote, basically to hop in bed with the Democrats? What is in it for the Republicans? Are they Republicans that would rather be Democrats? What's going on here?
I don't know. I don't know what districts these Republican congressmen come from. If they came from a district like ours, they would go home and get eaten alive by constituents who would say, why are you sending another $60 billion to Ukraine instead of securing our own border? And that's what Republicans have been saying, Pat, for the last 2 years. No more money for Ukraine until we secure our own border. And you saw a lot of people, including the Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, completely flip-flop and do exactly what he said he wasn't going to do. So I can't defend it. I can't explain it. I don't know why they're doing. I don't know why Mike Johnson and roughly a little more than half of the Republicans have gone along with this with the Democrats. But I think in the process they've determined that what's going on in Ukraine is more important than what's going on in America, and that makes me sick.
Do you think part of what's going on here, this is pure speculation on my part, and you've known me long enough now, Congressman, that you know that I don't hide from questions from you or things that I'm curious about or that I want to know. But the other thing that I'm starting to realize is I know almost nothing when it comes to the government and when it comes to Congress. What is the deal? Is it that our minority is that slim? The majority is that slim? Is it that we don't even know who we are? What is the problem? We're going to start changing our speakers of the House about as often as we brush our teeth if we're not careful.
Yeah, after Mike Gallagher formally leaves the Congress today, we have a one seat Republican majority, But what's important about that, Pat, is the Speaker of the House is a Republican. The Majority Leader is a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who decides what comes to the floor for a vote. So they could block this silly garbage and not bring it to the floor, but instead they've caved to pressure from the elites in our country, from the media, from those who really do believe that what's going on in Ukraine is more important than what's going on in America. So instead of negotiating a compromise, the HR 2, the toughest border security bill that we've ever passed out of the House, that's just been sitting in the Senate, instead of pairing that up with Ukraine aid, which is what Mike Johnson said he would do when he was elected the Speaker, and even before that is what he believed in, he's completely caved to the other side. And I don't know why. He says he goes into skips into classified briefings, and that's changed his mind. I've sat through all of the same classified briefings. And I believe that what's going on at the southern border in the United States of America is a bigger danger to America than what's going on in Ukraine. And that's why I can't go along with this. It's really infuriating.
Well, I know that there's so much going on that are some fights that you all are having on the House floor that I could barely believe. I know that yesterday on Friday, I know that the House passed a key procedural vote on foreign aid bills, setting up a final vote for today. In that, I don't even know who's who anymore. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that if we have a one vote majority or if we have a 10 vote majority at this point in time, I'm not really sure that that would make any bit of difference.
Yeah, the Democrats carried the rule bill. This has never happened before in congressional history where the minority party carried the rule and the Republicans voted. It was more Democrats and Republicans voting for it on the Rules Committee. And then on the floor, by the way, in Indiana, it was Jim Baird, Victoria Spartz, and I who voted against this massive, I think it's well over $100 billion foreign aid bill, and the rule to allow it to move forward. So if Republicans would have, I mean, one, the Speaker is the one who brought it to the floor. So Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise are the two who brought this massive foreign aid bill to the floor that spends nothing on securing our southern border. But get this, it gives $10.5 billion for economic and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. And then get this, Pat, $8.3 billion directly to Ukraine's police and border guard. $8.3 billion for the border guard in Ukraine, $0 for our border patrol in the United States of America. And you might recall, what's interesting about that to me is that the whole time Donald Trump was in the White House, he was asking for $5 billion to build the wall, and he couldn't get that from Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and then from Nancy Pelosi, who was the speaker for the second half of his term, that he couldn't get $5 billion to build the wall, but we're sending another $40 billion on top of what we've already sent Ukraine, $8.3 billion of which is for Ukraine's police and border patrol. If that doesn't make your listeners sick to their stomach, I don't know what will.
Well, it's nauseating, but the other thing is it's almost unconscionable. I can't make it work in my head. I can't imagine who has naked pictures of who else in Congress that they're holding them hostage and making them vote for a bunch of stuff that they have no business voting for. It's like, I don't know who's pulling the strings over there. You used to be able to know. You used to be able to know, well, Pelosi's people are going to do this. The people from here are going to do that. This will be there. Al Gore's going to pull this way. And now it's like the very people that you think would end up being the vanguard for whatever it is that we need as conservatives. I mean, I held great hope for our current speaker when he took over not that long ago. And now it's like in the last 30 days, he has done this complete flip around, and now he's as bad as anybody that we've had in there.
Yeah, the omnibus spending bill I voted for a couple of weeks ago that had earmarks for late-term abortion facilities. I couldn't believe that, and transgender earmarks. And it was, by the way, the biggest spending bill in congressional history. It was the reason I bring it up again is because when Nancy Pelosi was the speaker, we never had earmarks for late-term abortion facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this spending bill under the current Republican speaker was bigger than anything that Pelosi passed, and it had abortion earmarks in it. So, yeah, I'm upset about it. I'm in a bad mood, and I'm upset for our party and for our country that this is what this has come to. And if we have one more Republican member of Congress decide that they want to get out of here and go get a private sector job, or they get dangled a bunch of money in their face to go do something else, then there are more Democrats in Congress than there are Republicans. And then the Democrats really do have the speaker's chair, and with Chuck Schumer and Biden in the White House, they can do even more damage. So this is not a good situation. I'm focused on November. What can we do to win the Senate majority, get Donald Trump back in the White House, and then grow the Republican majority in the House? And I'd say get rid of all these Republican leaders in the House. We've seen what they're made of, and they're not made of, they don't have a backbone. They're not made of much. So let's fire them and replace them with Republican leadership in the House, a speaker, a majority leader, a whip, who have backbone and who are going to advance an America first policy, not this America last garbage that they're passing through today.
Well, and you know, I just in the last 2 weeks, I've heard so much coming out, speaking of the House, of people running for the House seat. Marlon, of course, who held it in the past, and then some others who want it. There's eight of them in total. But three or four of them at the top, their whole goal lately has been to do nothing but denigrate Marlon Stutzman, and they're bringing up fights that Pelosi took against him all the way back in 2015, which he spent a lot of his own money and defeated it in committee, and it was dead, down, and done. And yet now, not Democrats, you've got Republicans trying to dig it back up, and let's stop this guy from getting in. Now, if I'm a rational person, and I'm holding out hope that I think I'm still rational, but I'm not sure anymore. But when I look at that, I'm like, of all the people, I got to put Marlon back in there because he's the only one that's shooting straight with me.
Well, this is the most expensive House race in 3rd District history. And, you know, like you, I watch the ads and I get a pile of negative mailings every time I open my mailbox. It's incredible to me how much the campaigns have been about how everybody else is dirty and rotten instead of who's going to be the best conservative voice, the most effective congressman or congresswoman for our district.
And right.
I hope over the next 2 weeks that we have left, I hope they all pivot and go back to the – I really think the candidate who goes back to that, Pat, and tells us why they're the best conservative, I think that person is going to win on Election Day. It's not going to be the negative stuff that makes the difference. So it's disappointing to see that. The governor's race feels the same way. I mean, tell us what you're going to do for our state to move Indiana forward, what you're going to do to fight back against the radical left, not tear down your opponents. We haven't seen a whole lot of that. So I think the governor's race is by far the most expensive, $20 million spent already in the Republican governor's primary for the state of Indiana, and millions of more that are going to be spent over the next couple of weeks. So I think, like a lot of your listeners, I can't wait for election day to be over for a lot of reasons, but one of them is so that we can get back to a little bit of sanity in the mailbox and on TV and not watch all of these negative ads.
Okay, Congressman, let me edit you just a bit. Hang on, and we'll get back to you. We'll pick this up just the other side of this fast break.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo, 92.3 FM at 1190 AM and on the WoWo app.
Well, welcome back. Let's get back to Jim Banks, shall we? A few other things I want to touch off with him here. I don't know. Maybe you guys are like me. You can't wait for the election to be over. Let's try to deal with this, shall we? I went to the mailbox one day last week, Congressman. I think it was Thursday of last week. And when I got to my mailbox, I had 14 pieces of mail, two which were, I'll call it legitimate mail, and all of the rest were political, and all of them were just bunk. I mean, it was just garbage. I knew it was garbage as I was reading it. And what really saddened me was I was like somebody that's not into the news like you and I are. You know, we read something, we're like, okay, that's not right because that's not this and that's not that. But a lot of people, your people that are the armchair voters, they'll buy into all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's nutty to me.
I don't think Wendy Davis is soft on crime. In fact, I know she's tough on crime. I don't think that Tim Smith is a bad person and mismanaged the organization that he led. I happen to know he's a very effective businessman and business leader. And I don't think Marlon Stutzman is a liberal and soft on the border. I know he was a very conservative member of Congress, one of the most conservative members of Congress. So I hope people don't buy into it. I hope they see through it and focus on who these people are, the track records that they have, and how they're going to go to Washington to be the most effective conservative voice for Northeast Indiana, because Northeast Indiana deserves it.
I've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. We're talking to 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. And Congressman, with the week that you guys have had and the voting and running back and forth to the floor and all that, thank you for being faithful in chiseling out some time for us here in Northeast Indiana. I appreciate it. Let's talk two more things. Let's go back to Ukraine and the Ukraine aid. Is it a right position? If I were in Congress right now, my position would be not one more dime, not until they can account for the billions of dollars that we've already allotted to them. I'm not convinced that any of the money has gone where it was supposed to go. I would like to think it did. You know, I'd like to think that their guy, who's their current president, was doing right things and trying to do it for the right reasons. But I don't know that I buy that anymore. But Congressman, it's like, until somebody shoots straight with me, I don't know that I can vote for another dime for Ukraine.
Yeah, I think Republican leaders in the very beginning on this subject a year ago, 2 years ago, let us down by not tying earlier Ukraine aid to border security at our own border. They could have done that 2 years ago. That's why I voted against the first $40 billion. I just voted against another $40 billion today for Ukraine. I voted against billions of dollars in between because we have to restore America and make America strong and great again before America can lead around the world. I saw some idiot think tank guy this tweet yesterday that Ronald Reagan is rolling over in his grave because all these Republicans are voting against funding for Ukraine. And I'll tell you, Pat, I'm a Reagan Republican, and I reject that notion. Ronald Reagan knew that he had to restore America after Carter and the Democrats did what they did. He had to rebuild the military and restore America's economic strength before he could beat the Soviet Union. And Ronald Reagan today would be rolling over in his grave because Republicans aren't focused on putting America first and securing our own border, making America's focusing on inflation, focusing on spending, and doing what we do to make America's economy strong again, because that's the best thing. That's the best recipe for peace through strength around the world, is when America is strong. And America is weak right now with Joe Biden in the White House. So quit telling me what Ronald Reagan would have done. They would have put Ukraine's interest over America's interest, because I don't believe it.
No, I don't either. In fact, I just finished reading a book by Reagan, and then I finished reading another book about Reagan. I will tell you, the triumvirate that we had with Ronald Reagan, with Margaret Thatcher, Maggie Thatcher, and with Pope Paul, John Paul, those three brought about the kind of foreign policy that we needed. UK would be a mess right now. The America as we know it probably would not exist, and the Church of Rome would not be where it is if, in fact, they did not hold things accountable, and if you didn't have a Ronald Reagan here, a Thatcher there, and a Pope that he was, it would have been a mess. And that's why it always cracks me up when some Republicans, you not included, you're not in that number, by the way, where they go and they extol the virtues of Ronald Reagan, and they say, this is what we need, and everybody's like, yes! And then you look at their voting record, they're nowhere near Ronald Reagan mentality. And that's what we need to get back to.
Ronald Reagan was an America First president.
Yep.
There are so many similarities between Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan. I could go on and on about how the similarities between the two presidents, their administrations. I actually think Donald Trump was in many ways did things that Reagan tried to do, was more better Supreme Court justices, and you know what he did to focus America's national defense and hold China accountable. I mean, things like that. When the left, the mainstream media, and squishy Republicans whine about how Trump was tough on NATO, Reagan did the same thing. Reagan was tough on our allies like Japan, and expected more of them to step up, and was tough on trade, with tougher trade policies on Japan, and just like Trump was tough on NATO and Germany, wanting them to pay more of to do more for defense budgets and spend more on defense to stop Russia invading Ukraine and things like that that worked for Donald Trump. So there are many similarities between the two. And this whole notion that Reagan would have bankrupted America to send blank checks to Ukraine, he never would have done that.
No, he would not have done that. He would not have done that.
Republicans get away with claiming that.
Yep, you're exactly correct. Last question for the day, Congressman, talking to 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. This whole defund NPR, and you've kind of been part of that, and the rallying cry for that, the NPR, I mean, to coin somebody else's phrase, this is not my father's NPR anymore, is it?
I don't know that NPR was ever your father's NPR. Certainly not mine, but it's more left-wing propaganda, ideological garbage than it's ever been before, especially with the new CEO.
Right.
I had a tussle with the last CEO and got into it with NPR a couple of years ago when they had me on, and then they invited me on, which is their fault, and I argued with them and talked about how Adam Schiff lied about coordinating with the whistleblower. If you remember that, he said he didn't, but it's been proven true that he did. They did a fact check article on me and beat me up for accusing me of lying on NPR. Their editors and their writers were all upset about it, and I was proven to be right. But I got into a back and forth with them that just showed me how far off the cliff they've gone when it's come to propaganda rather than the news and education. So now this new CEO is just awful.
She's a mess.
She is the worst. The things that she said and done and stood for, and I think it's about $100 million that American taxpayers fund NPR, and we're funding left-wing propaganda. We shouldn't do it anymore. So I introduced a bill yesterday to defund public funding of NPR. I've got Republicans lining up from every corner of the Republican conference to sign on and co-sponsor it, and I'm going to take this on as a new mission to hold NPR accountable and defund them of taxpayer funding.
Well, and we will look for that from here in Indiana from afar. Listen, for your time today, Congressman, and I know that with all the vote and Ukraine and all the rest, I know it's an endless cycle this week. I appreciate you carving out time for us. Have a great weekend. The best to Amanda and the girls, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
And our thanks to Jim Banks for being with us. He'll be back again next week, and I'll be back with you straight ahead. And welcome back. We're glad you're with us on this Saturday. Always glad that you're with us. But this is kind of an important thing for me. We're in the last half hour of our weekend show, and I've got some people here from one of my favorite places on the planet, from the 122nd Air Base. And I've got a good friend of ours, Chief Master Sergeant Hoop. It's Hoop and Garter, but it's Hoop, right?
It's absolutely Hoop.
It's absolutely Hoop.
We're
right?
friends. Yeah.
You ever shoot hoops?
I do, yes.
Do
and
you?
I did. Yeah, I'm too old for that now, but yes. I played college basketball.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where?
Huntington College.
No kidding?
Yeah. Long time ago. But yeah.
Is that back when they had the solid backboards and you played with a brown leather ball and things like
not
that?
Not that long.
Okay,
I'm not the same age as you, Pat.
Remember, I graduated in 1972. So, okay. Back when, did you see her eyes roll back? You got to talk to her in a minute.
Yeah.
But 1972, we used to ride dinosaurs to school. And then, that made the marching band really difficult because you had to get, all brontosaurus is over here. But that's how that works. So things out at the 122nd, we were out there 2 weeks ago, and we were out there for the little presser that they did, which was awesome. Everybody's pretty excited because the F-16s are going to be out there. There are more and more of them. You've got about eight on the ground now?
We have seven as of this week.
Seven, okay. It's not like you bring them in, you jump in, and you take off. There's some work that has to happen there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, as we've talked about in the past, the jets that we're getting are from training bases, and so they're not combat-coded aircraft.
Okay.
They're not, truth be told, they're not in the greatest condition.
They
will be, yeah, yep. But it's going to take time. So we're working through that right now, putting a lot of elbow grease into those things and trying to get some sorties going.
Well, they took us out into the maintenance hangar when we were there 2 weeks ago. And I was astounded because they had four aircraft in the hangar, and they were disassembled, and they were all at four different stages of reconditioning. I had never seen so much computer equipment and so much wiring crammed into so many small spaces on the side of an airplane in my life. I couldn't believe what's in there.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating, and I've talked about the difference between the A-10 that we lost and the F-16 that we're gaining, and, analog versus digital.
Yep.
This is a much more advanced aircraft, and so there's a lot more advanced stuff going on there.
The thing I couldn't get over is you've got, I call it the yoke, but whatever it is that the pilot holds onto, it doesn't really move. It just senses what you're doing, and I'm like, okay, really? Because that sounds like my relationship with Kim. Honey, you didn't tell me what to, you should have known. You should have felt it and just done it.
Yeah. So,
and that's how that works.
And there's other stuff that we can't talk about.
Right.
That I'd love to share with you that would blow your mind with the aircraft. So, yeah, very cool.
Can you tell me sometime when Shay is out of the room and we can just talk? Or
yeah, he's the only issue.
Okay, there you go.
All right. Sure.
See, I told you. I said you don't quite qualify. So I have noticed that you have brought a compadre with you today, slightly younger.
Quite a bit younger, yes.
In fact, your age plus her age is probably my age, but she's with us. Tell us who you have.
Yeah, so really excited to bring to you today one of our outstanding airmen, and we have so many. We've talked about we have 1,000 airmen at the wing,
right?
all of them with individual, unique, great stories. But we wanted to highlight one this week. So we've got Senior Airman Delaney Smith. She's a crew chief, F-16 crew chief on our base, and kind of wanted to get her story out.
All right, let's get the microphone over her. Delaney, hi, welcome to the Pat Miller Program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, go ahead, pull that closer and just talk up and get use your full voice, do whatever you got to do. There you go. All right, and I know that probably that between brothers and sisters growing up and boyfriends and men at the base, you talk much louder than that. So we'll get there sooner or later. So you are, now you graduated from Carmel High School.
I did.
But you're originally from where?
I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay. So was that a big, I mean, did they make fun of you at Carmel that you're a cheesehead and all that stuff? So
no, I moved to Indiana when I was in about middle school, so it wasn't a huge transition.
Okay.
I wasn't necessarily into my teenage years yet.
Okay, but you went to Carmel. I found out that we have a little bit of simpatico here because we're both marching band geeks. These two will never get that. but that's cool. Do you think, this is a really dumb correlation here, do you think between everything that you learned and the disciplines in marching band, because Carmel is no slouch program, so being in a program like that actually maybe helped you get some disciplines that you use even now?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think the attention to detail and the discipline that we have from all the long hours that we spent out there trying to perfect everything, I think that definitely translated into my life in general and my life in the military as well.
Awesome. So now you got to the 122nd win.
After my sophomore year of college.
Okay. So you've been there a year and a half, roughly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So now, what is your experience like at the 122nd? What's been happening with you? What is your growth? What's your story?
So when I was a sophomore in college, I realized that I needed a different way to pay for college because it was dwindling quickly. So I had a Marine recruiter reach out to me at Purdue, and I went to go meet him, and it just wasn't really my thing. I had one of my friends in my classes who was out here at the base, and he said, hey, I do this really cool job. Like, I do maintenance on A-10s at the time. You should come and check it out because I pay for school and there's a lot of other things you can get from it too. So I came and I checked it out, and I originally had not a lot of support from my parents. They weren't super excited because they were used to frontline infantry from my cousin, so they didn't really know what to expect from the Air National Guard.
Right. Yeah, it's a different animal.
For sure.
I mean, it's definitely a different animal. A lot of camaraderie at the 122nd. So did they invite you in? I mean, have you gotten in and you're thoroughly grounded with everybody?
100%. We're a big family out there, and that's just one thing that I wasn't sure what to expect, how it would be in the military, because I didn't really know many people in the military. And it's just very apparent that everybody there is there to help you and be there for you no matter what you're going through, civilian or military. So it's just nice to see, like, the huge family that I feel like I've made since I've been out there.
Now again, your position, you are a senior what?
I'm a senior airman, so I'm an enlist level 4.
Okay. So is that getting kind of up there? Or are you?
No.
It's enlist level 4. It goes up to 8,432. So she's on the beginning of that. What is a normal day? Now, you're not at the base every day.
No, I'm a traditional airman, guardsman.
Okay. So your normal rotation is what?
So I do 1 week in a month. Sorry. 1 week in a month and then 2 weeks in the summer. But usually I try to get on more orders than that because usually they'll offer like AT days or training days or like TDYs or temporary duty.
So when you see something comes up on a roster and you know, hey, 3 weeks from now we're going to be doing this, doing that, you try to sign up for
my
that
name
stuff?
Is on there, 100%.
Is that right?
Yes.
So now, do you live here now, or do you still technically live in Carmel?
So my home is in Carmel. I just moved out of my apartment at Purdue, so I'm here in a hotel room for a little bit while I'm training, and then I'll go back to Carmel for a little bit, and then I'll move out to California for my job.
Okay, because you're going to graduate in May.
Yes.
So you're almost out.
Yes.
Okay. Hail to old Purdue. Okay.
Yes.
Now, you're laughing. You know the coolest thing about Purdue? Here they have a marching band of 435 people. They don't have a music program at Purdue. None of those kids that are in that marching band are getting any kind of credit, degree, or anything. So they're getting all their degrees in something else, right?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. I'm not 100% sure on that.
I'm 100%. Just take what I say and go with it.
Okay, I will.
So, so now, where are you at in your progress, I mean, at the base? What is it that you're doing? Now, you say that when you get out and everything, you're getting ready to go to California for your job.
Yes.
Now, that's with the military.
No, that is my civilian job.
Okay. Which, can I ask what kind of job that's going to be?
Of course. I'm going to go work for Lockheed Martin at Edwards Air Force Base as a contractor out there.
You are such a loser.
I know.
Lockheed Martin. Yeah, I've only heard about that my whole life. So when you get out there with them, are you taking with you a lot of the stuff that you've learned through the 122nd and you'll implement that there? Is that how that's going to work?
Yeah. So my dream job is to be able to be the liaison between the maintainers and the engineers, because working on planes out at the 122nd, I see all of the things that make maintaining aircraft hard, like placements where I can't get in there to change something. How am I supposed to maintain that? So what I want to do is I want to be the middleman between the engineer and the maintainer so we can engineer planes that are actually maintainable.
Okay. Yeah, we had a member of our family that was at the 122nd, and I think he's been gone now from there about a year and a half, but he loved it. It was awesome. Pictures of him and his dad next to the A-10s that whole bit. So, yeah. Now, have mom and dad been up here?
They have, yes. Okay. They came to the last air show and then the farewell to the A-10s little party that we had. So they absolutely love it up here whenever they get to come.
I love the air show. We've got an air show coming up in 25, right? Okay. Is that in June?
July.
Okay. And this time it's Thunderbirds again?
It is.
Good. I like them a lot. I like the Blue Angels, too. But the underside of the planes, the way they have the logo painted on there for the Thunderbirds, that is amazing. When they fly over, it is just nuts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to see the Blue Angels over at the Terre Haute Airport,
right?
First weekend in June, they're going to be flying over
this
there
year?
For an air show this June. Yeah.
Okay.
But then we've got the show in July of 25 that'll be far and away better.
Yeah. And these guys always get me a seat in the commander's tent.
Of course.
That's always tough, you know. Well, you know it's pretty cool when you're sitting there and you're watching this and you're trying to eat your lunch and they're firing up, and as they turn to head to the runway, the heat from, you know, it's like, okay, my sandwich just cooked again. So, but it's pretty cool. I've been a plane geek since I was 5 years old. I just love it. Now, you have a pilot's license.
I do, yes.
So it's just an individual private license?
Yes.
And you've had that how long? When did you get that?
I got that in August.
Oh, so you just got it.
It's very new, yes.
Okay. Now, are you certified in multiple engine or just single?
No, just single engine.
Okay. I've always wanted to do that so badly. When I was a kid growing up, in the beginning of growing up, like until I was about six, we grew up in Eagledale, which is a suburb of Indy, northwest. And there used to be an airport there, which was the Bob Shank Airport. On a Saturday, I would get my bowl of cereal. I was such a geek. I'd get my bowl of cereal and go out and sit at the curb of our house because we're four blocks from the airport. And I would sit and watch planes take off and land like for 4 or 5 hours. And my mom would go, "Are you going to come in?" "Yeah, when you get lunch ready." And then I'd take my sandwich out there and I'd sit and watch the airplane. But planes are just an amazing thing to me. I can sit and watch videos on YouTube and everything. I'm a member of the LA Flight Line, which is a thing that they do. And they have 3 YouTube shows a week and they show all the planes coming in. I drive my wife crazy. And we'll be sitting watching some thing on TV and I'll say, "Oh, look at that. That's an A-10. You know, mm-hmm. Oh, look at this. That's a C-350, you know, and all that." And she's like, "Okay, honey, really? Watch the," and I said, "Honey, it's a Hallmark movie." And then I make her mad because I say, "Okay, that guy she's with is not the guy she's going to end up with. They're going to break up. He's going back to New York. She's going to stay there in Boston and she's going to end up marrying that guy who's doing the maintenance on her grandfather's house." And she's like, "Will you stop it?" And sure enough, by the end, I just look at her and as things start coming together, I'm just, she goes, "All right, all right." I could write a Hallmark movie. Yeah, we ought to do a Hallmark movie. We ought to do a fake one. We do fake stuff on the dramas on the air all the time. We ought to do a fake one about like a pilot out at the air base or something. That could be awesome. You know, and we wouldn't use real names. Like we would like to do Master Sergeant Gloop. Why do you put up with me?
I don't know why I keep coming back.
One of these days he's going to come in here, he's just going to put a bullet in me. That won't hurt so bad once I get that out of you, Miller. So the 122nd has been a great thing for you. Now, if I have right now other young people, mm-hmm. 17, 18, 20, 22, and they're listening, and they're not really sure of the exact direction of their life, and something about the 122nd grabbed you, and it's kind of grabbing them, mm-hmm. Male or female, the opportunities are basically the same, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you would highly recommend it.
100%.
Okay. That says a lot right there, doesn't it? I mean, that really does say a lot.
It does. And Pat, that's why I wanted to bring her on today, is to, you know, to share her story and to highlight how unique it is to have a 23-year-old female sitting next to me who has only been in the military a short time, but is has gotten exposure to aircraft maintenance.
Right.
She got she's got multiple engineering degrees from Purdue and is graduating with zero debt because we are paying for her college.
Okay, how amazing is that?
Mm-hmm. Right?
I mean, how amazing is that?
Insane. My sister has six figures of debt for college, so.
And then on top of that, her the combination of her engineering degrees and her military experience opened doors for her to go work at Lockheed Martin with an amazing job in a few months. And what a great story.
We're, and I don't mean this wrong against Purdue. I like Purdue. But just coming out of Purdue, you might have applied at Lockheed Martin,
right,
but you might not have had the shoehorn in that you have now, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the 122nd really kind of greased the skids for you a little bit.
Right. They even told me within the interview, they said if I didn't already have a security clearance, they wouldn't have even considered me for the job.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, you know, I can get on the base out here anytime I want, because which is not exactly the same, but it's a little different. Well, listen, let me do this. Let me just say, first of all, to you, Delaney, thank you very much for coming in here. Thank you for your service to our country, okay, because we do recognize that around here. That's why we do honor flights and stuff. In fact, next Wednesday, if you happen to be at the airport, I'm going to be there as the honor flight takes off, which is, it always gets to me every time. It's an amazing thing. But thank you very much for being part of our show today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and to you, Hoop, you know, you and I are going to do this only about a million more times together.
You know, I can't wait. It's always a pleasure, Pat.
Yeah, well, listen, thank you very, very much. All right, we're going to slip away for just a little bit. We're going to come back, and when we do, one last segment that we're going to have for this day as we get out of here on this Saturday. Glad you're with us. This is Pat Miller here on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
Closing time, open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Hey, thanks for what you've done. You guys have hung around. We're here to the end of the program again for another Saturday update on the Pat Miller Program. Really, really glad that you're with us. And man, we've just been all over the map today, haven't we? We've talked about Katie Couric. We talked with Kayla Blakeslee about her take on a lot of local politics and how it's gone on. Philip Wegman was with us from his perch there inside the Beltway, as he is the White House correspondent for Real Clear Politics. We talked with Kami Canton from a great organization here in town. In fact, I'm going to have that up. When you go back, go back into this broadcast on our podcast and look at segment three of hour two. And my conversation with Tommy, there's just so much going on there that makes so much sense for a lot of us in the area. So make sure you get plugged in on that. And then we just finished talking to Jim Banks, 3rd District Congressman, and the good people from the 122nd. And let me just say this. Regardless of who it is that we have on from the 122nd, it's always a great time. These people know their stuff, and they know what they're doing. It helps me to know that at the ultimate end, our last line of defense in this area, from a federal government standpoint, is our 122nd, and it's right here in Fort Wayne, and these are people that I find over and over and over I can trust. We talked earlier that a friend of mine who owns another restaurant chain in town had taken over for the Powers Hamburger, and I'm excited about that. Well, then my curiosity got piqued because In-N-Out Burgers, a lot is going on with them out in California. Talked about this briefly in the last hour, but here's the bottom line. Lindsay Snyder, who took over her family's popular burger chain, the In-N-Out Burger, and she did that when she was only 27. Well, today she's 41 years old, and she's still fighting very hard because rather than cave in to everything that her goofy, loopy, left-leaning governor out there, Gavin Newsom, out there in California throws at her, they're trying to do the very best for themselves, for their restaurants, for their customers, and also for them primarily, the people that work for them, they're in their area. Menu prices at a lot of restaurants all over the state of California have soared and taken off in the wake of this minimum wage hike. But the In-N-Out president said she went toe-to-toe with several high-stakes company meetings and trying to keep costs as low as possible. She was on the Today Show and the Morning News Hour, and Snyder said, I was sitting in VP meetings going toe-to-toe saying we can't raise the prices that much. We just can't. She said, I had to take a stand and watch out for our customers. Somebody had to. And she goes, if it wasn't going to be me, then who was it going to be? And she's probably right. If she didn't do it, nobody else was going to do it. So that's her taking a big stand there in California. We'll look at that when I come back with you next week, because In-N-Out is going to stand because of the fortitude of one person, and it's a woman who is their CEO there for In-N-Out Burgers. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Look, a lot of it wasn't fun. This wasn't a bowl full of peaches today. This is hard stuff, but we need to know the hard as well as the good. It all has to come together. Have a fabulous weekend. We'll see you a week from today. This is Pat Miller with you here on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.